And we're beginning Masechta Sanhedrin now that we went through the three bavas, where we just spent over a year learning a lot about all the different kinds of dinim mamonis. So the next thing is Sanhedrin, which is going to be the bate dinim that are going to judge those dinim mamonis. So the Masechta is going to begin with the various numbers of dayonim that you need for judging different kinds of cases. We're going to talk about the qualifications of dayonim. We're going to talk about who can and can't be judged by a beis din and serve on it. We're going to talk about some of the dinim of edim, more about the rules of evidence for dinim momenus, and then eventually we're going to get into dinim nefashos, which is going to take up a substantial part of the masechta, all about the different dinim nefashos. There's also malchus, by the way. Malchus goes in a separate masechta that's going to be in masechta Makkos. And then at the end we have at the end we have Perek Chelek, which is once we talk about that there are people who are chayav misa, nevertheless they have a share in Olam Haba, so therefore it starts talking about those who have and don't have a share in Olam Haba. And of course we have all the fame of an entire perek of Agadah on the subject. But the Masechta begins now with talking about the various numbers of dayonim that you need to judge different kinds of cases. So the Mishnah starts off, Dine momenus bishloisha. Dine momenus, cases involving money, cases involving financial matters, have to be judged by three. It's by three dayonim, and we're going to see, of course, as the Gemara will always do, it's going to go in a lot more detail and point out that there may be exceptions to that. Not always necessarily do you have to have three, as we'll see. Gzelus v'chavolus. Then you have cases of gzelus, where a person stole or robbed from somebody else, v'chavolus, or where he injured him, is also v'shloisha, is also three members, three, a base sin of three. Gzelus, so Rashi gives a number of examples of gzelus. Classically, the Gemara explains, really the word gzela means grabbing something out of the other person's hand. You have an expression, v'yigzelus achanis miyad amitzri, where it mentions about one of David's giborim, one of the top people in his army, that one time he was fighting hand to hand with a tall, strong Mitzri guy, and he grabs the spear out of the guy's hand and kills him with it. So that's so gzelus actually literally means grabbing something out of the other person's hand. But Rashi explains that it can also be other things. For example, he gave him a pikkudin to watch, and now he denies that he ever received it. And in fact, he was shileach yad. In fact, he misused the pikkudin, and as soon as he does, he's considered a gazlan. Now, one thing is, the Gemara is going to point out that gzelus and chavolos are also part of dinim mamonis. So why is the Mishnah listing them separately? So we're going to have a couple of opinions about that in the Gemara. Do we mean that dinim mamonis means one type of dinim mamonis, namely, for example, just regular cases of loans and things like that, and then gzelus and chavolos will be where somebody did something illegal like that? Or do we mean that dinim mamonis is a general statement, and then gzelus and chavolos are an example of that? We'll see about that in the Gemara. Anyway, so either way, you need a base din of three for them, and the Gemara is going to show us from Psukim how we know that. By the way, one thing we have is throughout Bava Basra, we had very little of what we were learning was grounded in Psukim. Now in Sanhedrin, we're going to find much more that the dinim that we learn are going to be sourced in Psukim, as the Gemara is going to go. Well, even the Mishnah over here is going to go through some of the is going to go through in some details where we see from the Psukim, and the Gemara is going to expand on that a lot more. Next, the Mishnah continues, Nezek v'chatzi Nezek. Then you have cases where a person is chayev to pay Nezek. For example, Rashi says a shor ha'muad, or a person, was mazik. V'chatzi Nezek, and the various cases where shor is not a muad and you only have to pay chatzi Nezek. So those also those on the face of it are part of chavolos. So again, the Gemara is going to explain why those are singled out in the Mishnah. Anyway, tashlume kefil. Then you have where a person stole, and the cases where you have to pay a double portion. where you have to pay double, where you have to pay twice as much, but tashlum abav hamisha, or where you have to pay four or five times as much, as the pasuk tells us that if a person steals a sheep or an ox or tvachay mechorei, he shechts it or sells it, then he pays fourfold if it was a sheep, fivefold if it was an ox. So all of those also have to be judged and based in. And as we're going to see in the Gemara, all these kinds of things that we're talking, many of the things that we're talking about over here in the Mishnah, can only be judged by a basin of smuchim, only when they have smicha, ish mi piyish, back to Moshe Rabbeinu, which is one reason why the Mishnah is putting them into separate clauses. Why not just say, dinim mominus, gzilis v'chavolis, nezek v'chatzin nezek, etc., and then put b'shloisha at the end, because different ones need different types of people to constitute the basin. Some of them you need smuchim, some of them you do not, as we will see in the Gemara. So all of those b'shloisha, all of those have to be judged by a basin of at least three. As we're going to see in the Gemara, there's the point that a basin always has to be an odd number, so you don't have a tie, so you don't have a deadlock. The Mishnah continues. Ha'oinus, so a man was ma'anis a woman, and he has to pay a fine, and he's forced to marry her. V'amafata, or where he convinced her to go along with it. It's one or the other. Either he marries her or he pays a fine. V'amotzi shemra, or motzi shemra, which is where the husband accuses his wife, also a naira b'sula, that not only is she not a b'sula, but that he found that she was mizana during the period of erusin. If it's true, then she's chayiv misa, and if not, then again he pays a fine and gets malchus. So all of those b'shloisha, all of those also are judged by three. Divrei Rav Meir is what Rav Meir says. V'cham say fine. As far as the onus and the fata, They can be judged by three, but motzi shemra be'esru mashloisha. But the motzi shemra is going to have to be the case of the motzi shemra is going to have to be judged by a basin of 23. Mipnei sheyeshbo dinin nefashos, because there can be dinin nefashos involved. Because if it turns out that in fact what he's saying is true, and she was in fact mizana during the time of the erusin, she's going to be chayiv misa. And as we're going to learn later on in the Mishnah, cases of misa require a minimum of 23 dayanim. As we go through the Gemara, eventually we're going to get to Daf Ches or so. The Gemara is going to talk about what the underlying machloikas is between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Rav Meir also knows, of course, that there's dinin nefashos involved. So what's the crux of their machloikas? So that we'll see in the Gemara eventually. Next. Makus b'shloisha, cases of malchus, where a person has been over on something which makes him chayiv malchus. B'shloisha, also that's done by a beis din of three. Mishumer b'shmol, amr b'esem b'shloisha, but they said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel that it's not three, but rather 23. And again, we'll deal in the Gemara with what the underlying machlokas is. Next. Tosfos points out, now we mentioned a couple of the different kinds of knosses that the Torah imposes. In general, anytime you have the rule is anytime when the Torah says that you have to pay a certain amount, which is not the same as the amount of the damage, then it's called a knas. So examples of that are tashlum ekefel, you're paying double as much. Tashlum abav chamisha, more so. Chatzin nezek, most cases of chatzin nezek are also an example of knas, because you're paying only half rather than the whole thing. The fact that the Torah says in the case of an onus and a mefata that he has to pay a fixed amount of 50 sloim, that's also an example of knas. Now you have the Gemara mentions in Ksubas. In addition, there's also, for example, in the case of an onus, he's also paying for hutsar, and he's paying for boshas and so forth. So those are not necessarily knas, because those you're paying an actual amount. You're paying an actual amount that's going to vary depending on the individual circumstances. But the 50 sloim itself is a knas, and dine knosis can only be judged by a basin of smuchim. Tosfos though points out that there are actually a number of other knosis that the Mishnah is not mentioning. For example, it doesn't mention the fact that if a shur amud kills somebody, not only is the shur given skila, but the owner has to pay a koifer, has to pay a certain amount. To the yoshim of the victim, and if the victim was an eved knani, then you pay a fixed amount of 30 sloyim to the owner. So Tosfos points out, first of all, as the Mishnah is going to tell us later on, when it comes to the Shur Amud, it's going to have to be judged and executed by a Beis Din of 23, and only then are the owners paying these kofar anyway. So the Mishnah doesn't mention it together with the other Dinei Knossos, because in fact the other Dinei Knossos can be judged by three, and here you're saying you need 23. Then Tosfos says maybe not so. Another answer is maybe it's included in Chavolos. After all, the first line of the Mishnah said Gzelus v'Chavolos v'Shloisha. Chavolos means cases of injury, so maybe this is included in that. Another possibility is okay, the Mishnah is not mentioning every possible case. We often say Tana v'Shire, that the Tana doesn't list every single thing. He leaves out some things. Continues the Mishnah. Ibar HaChodesh B'Shlosha, to decide to be Mekadesh the Chodesh, for that you need the expression Ibar HaChodesh literally means to make the Chodesh Me'uber, to make it 30 days long, but we'll see in the Gemara why the Mishnah uses that expression, because really we're not talking about so much Ibar HaChodesh, we're talking about Kiddush HaChodesh really, so we'll see about that in the Gemara eventually. Anyway, so that B'Shlosha, you need three Dayonim, you need three Dayonim for that, to sit and hear the evidence from the Edim. The Gemara is going to explain. The Gemara is going to explain that it means Kiddush HaChodesh, and the Gemara is going to discuss why indeed it uses the word Ibar HaChodesh. Anyway, B'Shloisha, you need three. Ibar HaShana B'Shloisha Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Meir says also, as far as Ibar HaShana, Beis Din will have to get together, Sanhedrin will have to get together and decide on each time whether a year needs to be an Ibar year, whether you add a second adder. So they also, Rav Meir says that you need a panel of only three to decide that. Rav Shimon Gamliel says you can start with three. B'shloisha maschilin, you start with a panel of three to even sit down and discuss whether we need an Ibur Yor this year or not. But then Rav Shimon Gamliel says then you don't just decide the three of them say okay we need an Ibur Yor, that's that, let's go and do that. We then bring in two more and they have five and they start deliberating among themselves later on in the perek. We're going to learn Daf Yud Aleph Yud Beis about the different criteria that Beis Din uses to determine whether to make an Ibur Yor or not. So you start with three to even vote whether we even need to have that discussion. Then once they decided we need that discussion, then you bring in two more and they start discussing the pros and cons of making an Ibur Yor this year. V'goymin b'shiva, and then when they're ready to decide it, then they add two more, and they have seven altogether to make that decision. Says Rav Shimon Gamliel. V'im gomer b'gimel mu'uberes b'di'evet. If they finished it with only three, then it is mu'uber. But lachatchila, you should have all seven of them involved. The Mishnah continues. Smicha zkenim. The next thing is the fact that the zkenim have to lean their hands on the par helam davar shel tzibur. So we have the case described in Chumash Vayikra. We'll learn about the details of it in Masech Tehorius later this year, Be'ez Hashem. You have where Beis Din with Sanhedrin Gdola made a mistake in Halacha, and most of the people follow them. They have to bring a special korban, and the Skenim have to lean their hands on the korban. As we know, for example, a person brings an Oler or a Shlomim or a Chatas, an individual one, they lean their hands on it. It's called Smicha. Here you have with this Par Halam Davar Shel Tzibur, members of the Sanhedrin have to lean their hands on it. And the minimum number that you need for that is b'shloisha, is three member smichaskin varifas egla, and also to do an egla arufa, the case of the egla arufa. So those b'shloisha divrei Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says each of those needs only three as well. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a b'chamisha. Rabbi Yehuda says each of those you need five. Five dayanim who will lean their hands on the head of the animal, and five who will be present when they do the initial stages of the egla arufa. You have the egla arufa, as we learned in Masechta Sota, has a few stages in it. The first stage is where members of the Sanhedrin Gdola come out to the area where the body was found, and they measure to find the closest city. So we're saying three or five respectively need to be involved in that. The Gemara actually is going to point out that the word smichas zkenim has another meaning as well. It can also mean giving smicha to zkenim, the original smicha ishmi piyish, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. That it would mean that according to Reb Shimon, you need three dayanim present when smicha is being granted, which we'll learn about that on Daf Yudalev, Be'ez Hashem. Next, the Mishnah continues. Hachalitza v'hamiunin b'shloisha. Other things that require a beis din of three are chalitza. You need to do in front of a beis din of three, and miunin, which is miun, is the case where a minatora, a man has the ability to marry off his daughter even when she's a ketana. He accepts the kedushin on her behalf, and that marriage is fully binding d'oraisa, and the only way to dissolve it is, as with any other marriage, is with a get or with the husband dying. But you have, if the father is dead, then the d'rabbanan, you don't want the girl to remain unmarried until she becomes a d'ola. In those times, it wasn't always safe for a girl, a young woman in that situation. So therefore, the Chachamim came up with the idea that her mother or her brothers or whoever's taking care of her can receive the kedushin on her behalf when she's a ketana. But because that marriage is only dirabanan, then there's an out called miun where she can say at any point that I don't want to be married to this guy anymore, and that's it. The marriage is dissolved. So the Mishnah is telling us then that you need a beis din of three in order to for miyun to happen in the for miyun to happen in the presence of it. So each of those needs three. Actually, when it comes to chalitza, actually the Gemara mentions in Yevamos an opinion that you should have five, and that is in fact how we do it nowadays. When chalitza is done, you have three main dayanim, and then you have two auxiliary dayanim, because the purpose of it is in order to publicize the chalitza as much as possible. But the Mishnah is saying over here that basically you need only three. Many of these things, by the way, are many of these points in the Mishnah, by the way, the Mishnah is not always mentioning over here, but many of them are, in fact, argued on. The one about chalitza, for example, that you need three, the Mishnayos and then Gemaras and Yevamos mention that that's not universally agreed to. An interesting question in that regard is, So Rashi points out that mi'unin, the reason now chalitza that we learn from a pasuk and we learn from psukim and yevamos that you need three mi'unin. Rashi says since it's rabbanon, we have a general rule called the tokon rabbanon kein d'oraisa tokon. And when the chachamim make a takana, they make it similar to something d'oraisa. An interesting point in that regard is the Mishnah is not mentioning the matter of giving a get. So does a get need to be given in the presence of a beis din of three? There is actually quite a lot of discussion about that among Rishonim and Achronim. Many Achronim point out now. So you have like this: there are Rishonim, the Or Zeruah, and some others who say that yes, it has to be done in the presence of a beis din of three. And they point out that when Rashi says over here, called the Tokon Rabbanon, came to Raisa Tokon. What Rashi means is, in other words, the Chachamim modeled the concept of Miun on the concept of Get, because after all, they're very similar. In both cases, a marriage is ending. So if we're saying that miyun is, which is dirabanan, is similar to something daraisa, that something daraisa would be a get, and that would imply that a get has to be given in the presence of beis din. So the Ozarua holds that way. The Nodi Yehuda has a tshuva where he discusses the whole point and concludes that we should do that. On the other hand, a lot of Achronim disagree with that point. The Maram Shif over here points out that the Mishnah doesn't mention Gittin because, in fact, all you need is Edim. You don't need a Beis Din. Many Achronim disagree with the Noda Behuda's conclusions on the subject. One thing is, one thing they point out, you have an entire Masechta Gittin, and never once does it mention over there that you must have a Beis Din. In fact, we had just the other day, a few days of a couple of blocks before the end of Bava Basra, we had a story over there involving where there was a guy who potentially would divorce his wife and give her huksuba, or rather she'd collect it from the third party, from the Orev, who had co-signed on the huksuba, as we talked about there. And the Gemara had used the expression, Otu called him a garish, bevei dini magarish. Do you think that everybody who divorces does so in the presence of Beis Din, implying that you don't need to? So there's a huge amount of discussion back and forth on the subject. Lamaisa, The Lamaisa, the poskim say, in principle, you shouldn't need to do a get in front of a beis din. Practically speaking, considering how much complexities and complications there are in the giving of a get, and also to be choshish for the no to be Yehuda's opinion, and in general, when it comes to a get, we try to satisfy all the possible opinions. Then, yeah, do it in front of a beis din. If we say that it doesn't require, then when Rashi says that mi'unin is similar to something d'oraisa, so they explain he would be talking about chalitza. Because chalitza and miun have this in common. In both cases, she's taking the active role. In the case of chalitza, she's the one taking off his shoe. In the case of miun, she's the one who's saying, I don't want to be married to him anymore. Next, the Mishnah continues. Netarivai. Now you have a case. The Torah tells us the fruit of a tree in its fourth year, the first 3 years, the fruit is Orla, and you're not allowed to eat it. The fourth year, it's Netarivai. It has a Kedusha similar to Maaseh Sheni. So Maaseh Sheni and also Maaseh Sheni, she'ein dam of you doing. In both cases, where you have Netarivai or Maaseh Sheni, and you don't know the value of it. So you need to know how much it's worth in order to be poideh. Bishlosha. So also, you need a panel of three dayanim to decide how much it's worth. Similarly, ha-hekdeshes, when a person has something of hektish, he donated something to hektish, and now he wants to buy it back. So also bishloisha, we also need bishloisha, we also need three people to decide to decide the value of that to decide the value of that hektish. Next, the Mishnah continues. Then you have also now you can have also erchin, which is the Torah tells us the concept that you say erech erki olai or erech ploni olai. You say I pledge my own erech or I pledge the erech of somebody else. So you look up in the Torah in Parshas Bechukosai for men and women for different age brackets. There's different amounts that you have to pay hektish for that. So it's a type of hektish, and that kind of thing also. When you have metaltlin involved, which the Gemara is going to explain later on in the perek. Here we have, by the way, this is one of those cases where the printer is decided, probably based on the manuscripts they have in front of them, to kind of jam all the Mishnayos of the perek together. In a printed Mishnayos, you would have this perek is divided into several Mishnayos, but here in the Gemara, it's all stuck together. So many parts of this Mishnah, we're only going to get to the Gemara of them only in a few days or even a couple of weeks. Anyway, so metaltlin. So you have erchin that involve metaltlin, then you need three people to evaluate the value of those metaltlin. And the point is that the Maharam explains the reason why we have to say the reason why we have to be talking about metaltlin is because, first of all, when it comes to the metaltlin themselves or karka, it's not erchin. Erchin specifically is the values of a person where a person says erki olai or whatever. And if it's the person himself, you don't need a beis din to evaluate anything. You just look up male or female and what's the age bracket. So therefore, the case where you would need a beis din of three to evaluate the value of things is specifically when we're talking about when there's metaltlin involved, or karka, as we're going to go on to say in the Mishnah. But the point is, in other words, that we're not just talking about a plain case of erchin, as the Gemara is going to end up explaining. the Gemara is going to end up discussing what exactly the Mishnah means, and one thing it means is where he says he declares an erech, and then he says that I'm gonna set aside certain metaltlin, and though these I'm gonna use to pay off my erech. So now we need to know how much they're worth, and the Gemara is gonna have some other explanations as well. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda, Echad man Kohen. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Fine, I agree that you need three to decide the values of that, but one of those three has to be a Kohen, as we'll learn in the Gemara where Rabbi Yehuda gets that from." Vakakois. Now, if it's a matter of hektish of land, then it's not enough to have three tisha v'koyin. Then you need at least nine Yisraelim and one koyin v'odim kayotz behen. In the same way, when you're talking about a person where a person was makdish himself and needs to be poed to himself, then you also need 10 to evaluate him, of whom one needs to be a koyin. And again, the Gemara is going to deal with what do you mean a person can't be makdish himself, and we'll deal in the Gemara with what that case means. Again, the Gemara over there is also going to learn from Pesukim how we know that in that case you need 10, and how we know that one of them needs to be a Kohen. Okay, So far we've gone through the various cases where you need three or some of them five or some of them five or seven, but not more than, and then the last case over here was where we needed 10. Now, you have among bate dinim, you have basically three sizes of bate dinim. You have a base din of three, which we've mentioned so far. Then you have a base din of 23, and then you have a base din of 71. So now let's talk about what needs a base din of 23. Dinin nefashis be'esru m'shloisha. Any case where a person is being judged and might get executed, that you need 23, that you need a base din of 23 in order to do that. As we'll see in the Mishnah itself, is going to explain where we get the number 23 from. Hareveya v'anirba be'esru m'shloisha. Specifically, within dinin mominus, not only within dinin nefashis, rather hareveya v'hanirba, where a shur or any other animal had relations with a woman, or v'hanirba, where an animal was used for such actions by a man, either way be'estrum or shloisha, either way you need a judgment of 23, because not, and the point is not just for judging the person. And we're talking about also for judging the animal as well. The animal is going to be chayev misa v'haragta se'isha v'esa behema. The pasuk says, well, that's the Gemara brings, but the Mishnah brings, be'esrim shloisha shenema v'haragta se'isha v'esa behema. The pasuk says you should execute the woman and the behema, and the same thing when it was a man and a behema. So the point is, the Torah is making a hekesh between the woman and the behema, just like the woman has to be judged by 23, as the Gemara is going to explain, as the Mishnah is going to explain soon why we get that number. The same way the behema has to be judged by 23. Similarly, the pasuk says regarding a man who commits bestiality with the animal, that the person himself is chayav misa, and the animal you should kill. So the same idea, we have a hekesh between the person and the animal. So we have, in other words, the same hekesh or a similar hekesh with a man and the animal, or with a woman and the animal, and therefore the same din by both of them. The animal has to be judged by 23. Next, shur haniskal be'esrum shloisha. Another case where you need 23 in order to judge an animal and condemn it to being killed is a shur that killed a person, or any other kind of animal that killed a person, and now it has to be judged and executed by beis din. Shenema, as the pasuk says, shur yisakol v'gambol av yomos. The pasuk says the shur will be given skila and the owner is put to death. Now, it doesn't actually mean the owner of the shur is not actually put to death, as the pasuk goes on to say, he pays a koifer, but nevertheless, Mephoshim explained on the pasuk that the simple meaning, it means he would be chayev misa, except the Torah has rachmanus on him because it wasn't him who killed, it was his animal, and therefore it allows him to get off with a fine. Whatever the case, the point is that here in terms of the Mishnah, what we're saying is that those words v'gamba olav yomos are not really necessary, because in fact the owner is not being executed, and therefore it's there only for the drasha. Namely, kimisas bailim, kach misas asher, the same number of dayonim as you need in order to execute the owner. Were he chayiv misa? If it was a case where he was chayiv misa, then we just said you would need 23. The same way, to execute the shur, you also need 23. And the same thing with other kinds of dangerous animals. Hazaev, a wolf, v'hari, a lion, v'hadoiv, a bear, v'hanomer, or a leopard, a bardless, which is, Rashi just defines it over here as chayahi, it's a type of chaya. There's different in Baba Kama, the Gemara talks about, and based on the Gemara and the Mephoshim over there, there are a few different possibilities of what a bardless is. Rashi over there in Baba Kama translates it as a polecat, which is an animal similar to a skunk. There's different other, the Gemara seems to identify it over there as a type of snake, and there's a few other possibilities what it means. In any case, so all of those, they're dangerous animals, v'hanochash, or a snake. So any of these, if they kill the person, misasin be'esrim shloisha, then also they have to be brought to beis din, and beis din will judge them, and you need a beis din of at least 23 in order to execute them. Rabbi Eliezer says, never mind beis din. You see any of these dangerous animals, just go and kill it. You don't need a beis din at all. And then whoever kills them, whoever's quicker to kill them is zeicha, because he took away a dangerous thing that could harm people. And therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you don't have to talk about you don't have to talk about what the how many dayonim you need for it, because according to him, you don't need dayonim at all. When we say zocha, it doesn't just mean that he has a schus; it means that he actually gets a certain monetary benefit from it, as we'll see in the Gemara towards the end of the perek what Rabbi Eliezer means by that. Rabbi Akiva says you need 23 in order to execute them. Now, Rabbi Eliezer seems to be saying, Rabbi Akiva rather, seems to be saying the same thing as the Tanakhama. So we'll see in the Gemara about the point that they're arguing about. The Gemara is going to explain that specifically they're arguing about the snake. So so the Tanakhama would say you have six animals that are listed, that that all of them, Misasin, Esther, Meshloisha, the snake included. Rabbi Akiva would say that, no, a dangerous snake, then anybody can kill it. But the other five, yes, you need a base din of 23. Obviously, we're not talking about where it's threatening somebody right now. We're talking about where previously this animal has killed, and now there's a danger where it's going to kill again. Yeah, obviously, if we're talking about that an animal right now is chasing after a person with intent to kill, then you kill it. You don't need a beis din for that. Even later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about even if a person is a roidif, is chasing after somebody else with intent to kill, then you can wound him or if necessary, kill him in order to get rid of the danger. But here we're talking about where it's already a done deal. Now we get into the beis din of 71. The highest based in the Sanhedrin Gdolah. The Mishnah says, "Ein donin loyas a shevet." You can't judge a shevet. So Rashi explains that the shevet over here would be when you have the majority of a shevet, of one particular shevet, that worship Avodah Zarah b'mezid. So they have to be judged by Beis Din, and that already is not something that can be judged by one of the lower Bate Dinim. That one has to be judged by Beis Din of 71, the Sanhedrin Gdolah. So Rashi uses the expression that we're talking about the majority of a shevet. The Marshal says, wait a minute, what do you mean only most of the shevet? The Gemara is going to, the Gemara, when it discusses this, is going to end up saying that we're talking about the entire shevet. So Marshal says, okay, maybe the Gemara doesn't mean the entire shevet, rubri kikuloi. And there is quite a bit of discussion about among Achronim about this. In particular, we're going to end up towards the end of the Perek, where we deal with this part of the Mishnah. We're going to talk about this is a case similar to Ir HaNidachas. The question is, what are the criteria for a city to be considered an Ir HaNidachas and have the special dinim that are outlined in Parashas Sira A and that are going to be discussed at the end of Or Masechta? So one point is it's you have to have a certain minimum number of people. And a certain maximum number of people who were enticed to worship Avodah Zarah. So Marsha points out, for example, that the Rambam says that when Rashi says Ruboy, there is a good reason for it, because in fact, more than Ruboy, it would have actually a different din. When it comes to an Ir HaNidachas, the Rambam describes that only if the population of the city is not the majority of the Shevet. If it is, then you don't consider it an Ir HaNidachas, then you have different dinim. So there's quite a bit of discussion about this. Rav Moshe has a truva on the subject in Igros Moshe on Choshen Mishpat, where he discusses in detail the different opinions of Marshal and Marsha and so forth on this point of when we say that the Beis Din of 71 has to judge a Shevet, do we mean only when it's in the entire Shevet or most of it, and different details like that. Anyway, so they have to be judged. So no lower Beis Din can judge the Shevet. The loyas novia sheker, or if a person comes and gives a false nevuah, he also has to be judged by Beis Din. The loyas kohen gadol, or the kohen gadol, all of them, LRP Beis Din, shal shivim be'echad, all of those can be judged only by a Beis Din of 71, meaning the Sanhedrin gdola. For those, you can't have any of the lower But the dinim for that, the Gemara is going to explain how we learn with each one of them that you need 71. Interestingly, the Mishnah does not mention the case of a king. How many are needed to judge a king? We're going to learn in the next parak, actually, that it's not so simple to judge a king anyway. The Gemara, in the next parak, we're going to learn that there's a difference in that regard between a melech Yisrael and a melech Yehuda. where the Gemara is going to end up explaining that the Malchi Yisrael were chutzpan yaks, and they wouldn't necessarily listen to the Beis Din anyway. So the Binyan Shloima points out over here, in fact, that that may be a reason why the Mishnah is not mentioning a Melech over here. When the Mishnah was written, there was no longer a king from Malchus Beis David. There were none of them after Churban Bayis Rishon, and the next one that's going to be is Limos HaMashiach. And then, in the times of the second Beis Mikdash, they had at times there were Jewish kings, but those are from other Shvatim. And as the next parak is going to tell them, those don't get judged by Beis Din at all for reasons that we'll learn about over there. So that would be a reason the Mishnah doesn't mention a king. So all those cases have to be judged by the Beis Din of 71. Another thing that requires a Beis Din of 71 is to decide to go out to an optional war. So an optional war would be, Rashi learns that most wars that the Jewish people fight are called Milchemes Rishus, with the exception of the wars of Yeshua to conquer Eretz Yisrael. There are different opinions about that among Rishonim about, and actually in the Gemara and Sota about that, which wars are considered Rishus and which ones are considered a higher level mitzvah or chayva. You have the war against Amalek. You have wars to fight off enemies who are attacking the Jewish people. You have wars where they go out on their own to expand the territory of Eretz Yisrael. So there are different categories of wars in this regard. Anyway, so the Mishnah is saying, in order to decide to go to such wars, you need the consent of the Beis Din of 71. Next, in order to add space to the city of Yerushalayim or to the Azara, you need the Beis Din of 71 to agree to that. We'll learn in Masechet Shavuos, Best Hashem, we'll learn about the details of how they do that. They're able to do the Yerushalayim. The point of expanding Yerushalayim is you have more area where you can eat Kodshim Kalim and Maaser Sheni and so forth. And then in the case of adding to the Azara, so you have more space to be able to shecht most korbanos and to be able to eat them, etc. So they're able to expand them, but there's a whole process involved, and part of that process involves the Beis Din of 71. Another thing you need a Beis Din of 71 for is to decide to appoint Bate Dinim. To appoint Bate Dinim for the Shvatim. Meaning, do we mean just in other words that they have to actually go out there and decide and then put these people in their location and say you're going to be judging this Shevet. So Rashi explains, first of all, when we say the Shvatim, means in all the cities in Eretz Yisrael. Titn l'chol b'chol sha'arecha, as the pasuk says about Dayanim. So therefore, Rashi learns that it actually means that the Beis Din, the Sanhedrin of 71, would actually have to go out to every city and appoint 23 people to be the local Beis Din. As the Gemara is going to learn, how we know that the Beis Din of 71 has to be involved over there. That said, though, there is actually an explanation. Now, like this, according to Rashi, it comes out. So you have the Beis Din of 71. You have a number of Bate Dinim of 23 that are going to be mentioned later in the Masechta that sit in various places around the Beis Hamikdash. Other than that, the next lower levels, you have Bate Dinim in every city of 23. The Ramban actually holds that, in addition, you also have to have a Beis Din for each Shevet. It would also be a Beis Din of 23, but in other words, it would outrank the Bate Dinim for the individual cities. In fact, you have in the story of Pilegesh Begiva, you have where it's after the whole story of what happened in Giva over there, it says that the Jewish people sent a message to Shevet Binyamin saying what happened over here. You have to hand over these people to be executed, and Bnei Binyamin did not want to listen. So according to the Ramban, the vote would be, in other words, that we're saying that the national Beis Din, the national Sanhedrin, sent a message to the Sanhedrin of Shevet Binyamin, saying, "You guys, they're saying you have to hand these people over, these Rishoyim from Giva, that to us, that we can judge them and execute, and if we find them guilty, execute them." And Bnei Binyamin say, basically, mix out of our business. We'll handle it by the Beis Din of our own Shevet, and everything develops from there. Anyway, so according to that, then it might mean That when we say over here, Sanhedrius the Shvatim, may not mean the Senate, may not mean the Sanhedrins for individual cities. It may actually just be that the Dayanim, just that the national Sanhedrin has to appoint Sanhedrins for each Shevet, but not necessarily that they have to appoint them for every city. Every city has to have Shofnim v'Shochim Titan l'Chabachasharacha, but not necessarily that the basin of 71 has to be involved in that. That would be possibly according to the Ramban, but Rashi over here is stating specifically that the basin of 71 has to go out to each of these cities and appoint the local dayanim. B'chlal, there's a thing brought in Tanit Ve'eli Yohu that I've brought in many sichas, that the job of Sanhedrin of 71 was supposed to be to travel around from city to city in Eretz Yisrael and check up on things and make sure that everybody is learning Torah and doing mitzvahs and that there are no averus going on. Unfortunately, in the times of the Shoftim in particular, it mentions that the members of the Sanhedrin didn't bother going around, and therefore things like Pelegish Begiva and other negative things ended up happening. Anyway, the Mishnah continues. Ein oisin irani dachas LRP based in shoshivim ve'achad. Another thing that you need a basin of 71 for is to declare a city an irani dachas. And by the way, the Mishnah mentions, and now the most of the dinim of irani dachas are going to be at the very end of our masechta. But here, the Mishnah mentions a couple of dinim of it. Ein oisin irani dachas el besfar. You do not declare an irani dachas in a city on the border, because what's going to happen if the city ends up getting destroyed, as an irani dachas is supposed to be, then you're going to have an exposed area on the border over there where the Goyish, where the nearby Goyish nations can use it as a staging ground to invade Eretz Yisrael. So you can't do that. V'loy sholosh. You also can't make three cities next to one another be irani dachas. So if you had two that were declared in irani dachas, then the third one, no matter where it is in Eretz Yisrael, you can't do that anymore. You're going to have to treat the people as individuals. Whereas we'll learn at the end of the Masechta, there's a considerable difference between an irani dachas and a city where we treat the people as individuals. They're a different type of missa for them. The city is not destroyed where it was individuals, etc. So you don't do that. Aval oisin achas ashtayim, but you can make one or two adjacent cities be an irani dachas. As the Gemara is going to explain close to the end of the parak, what the Mishnah means by this. If it says you can't do three, obviously it means you can do one or two. So we'll see about that in the Gemara. Next, the Mishnah says Sanhedrin Gdola hoisa shoshim ve'echad. So the Sanhedrin Gdola consisted of 71 dayanim. All of these things that we're mentioning so far, where you need a basin of 71, that's the Sanhedrin Gdola. Uktana shel esrim mishlosha. The ones that we mentioned earlier in the Mishnah, where you need 23, that's called the Sanhedrin Uktana. Minayin l'gdola shishar shim ve'echad. Let's start with how do we know that a basin that the Sanhedrin Gdola has to be 71. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Hashem tells Moshe, Esfali shivim ish mizikne Yisrael, gather to me 70 of the elders of the Jewish people. So that's 70 plus Moshe. Moshe agabehen. Moshe is overseeing them. So therefore, there's your 71. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, shivim. Rabbi Yehuda says that no, altogether it's 70 dayanim, not 71. As the Gemara will explain eventually, where Rabbi Yehuda gets that from. Why don't we count Moshe separately? We're also going to get into the Gemara over there into an interesting discussion of the whole story of Eldad and Medad over there in Parshas Baaloscha. So we'll see from there what the deal is. There is, by the way, there's a Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Zvachim that mentions 72 Zkenim, and there's an explanation that at some point, like this, you have, the Mishnah is telling us, according to the Chachamim, that you have 71. Eventually, though, they came up with, you have to have a separate Nossi and Av Beistin. We know we have the Zugers from the beginning of Pirkei Avos, Yosef and Yezer, Yosef and Yochanan, Yeshub and Prachya, Benitzer HaBeili, and so forth, the next few generations. So the idea would be that there didn't used to be a position of Nasi, and then it was created separately. So now, at that point, then you have the original 71 plus the Nasi makes 72. But when it comes to judging Dinin Nefashos and the other things like that, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, you always have to have an odd number. Or the mission actually is going to tell us you always have to have an odd number, so then you wouldn't actually have the then you wouldn't have the Nossi and the Abbeist in both participating and voting. Okay, so there's your 71, and according to the Behorda, 70. How do we know that the Sanhedrin Ketana consists of 23? Shenamar, like this. The pasuk says, "V'shoftu ha'eda v'hitzilu ha'eda." The pasuk describes in a case where a person killed somebody, and you have to, and Beis Din has to figure out whether it was b'shoyeg or b'mezid. Is he chayev misa? Is he chayev to run away to the orei miklat? Is he potter? So one pasuk says, "V'shoftu ha'eda," the eda should judge him, and the next pasuk says, "V'hitzilu ha'eda," the eda should save him. So that means you need Eda Shefetes ve'Eda Matzelas. Means you need at least an Eda, which is the Mishnah is going to go continue to point out, refers to 10. So you need at least an Eda of Dayonim who would be able to judge him and decide that he would be Chayiv Misa, the Eda Matzelas, and then you also have to have an Eda who would save him, who would vote to acquit him. Hare Estrim, so far you're up to 20 Dayonim. Doesn't necessarily mean, of course, that they're going to split like that. 10 and 10, but there has to at least be the possibility that there should be a split of 10 and 10 like that. So that brings us to 20. Now, what about the other three? So then what you need is as follows. So first of all, Uminayim la'eda shi'asara. How do we know the word Eda means 10? Shenemar ad mosa la'eda ha'ra'azos. Hashem tells Moshe after the chet meraglim, how long am I going to have to deal with this bad Eda? Yotzu, and an Eda means the 10 bad meraglim. Yotzu, Yeshua v'kolev, meaning in other words, there were 12 meraglim, and Yeshua and Kolev were the good guys. So therefore, it means that there are 10 bad ones. We learned from that that an Eda means 10. So far we have 20. Now, how do we know that you have to add another three dayonim? So it's like this. Mimashma shenema. Now we have a pasuk that tells us in Parashas Mishpatim, loisia achri rabim lerois. The pasuk says, don't follow the majority to do bad. So that means that so shemeani sheyeyimoyim latoiva. Now that implies though that when it comes to exonerating the guy, when it comes to doing good for him, Then we could follow the majority. In other words, obviously Maharsha says now that we can't say the pasuk doesn't mean the pasuk is obviously not going to mean that when there's a majority who want to convict him, we can't convict him. Now, that's not how it works. So it obviously means, in other words, that there is a majority which you do go latoiva. And yet the pasuk continues, you incline and follow the majority, meaning l'chiyuv or l'ptur. So what is it? So it means it means the kind of majority that you need to do good, to let the guy go free, is not the kind of majority that you need in order to convict him, to do bad for him. To incline to good, to declare him innocent, you need a majority of only one. But to incline to bad, to incline to say that he's going to be chayev misa or malchus or whatever it is, you need a majority, at least misa. I think it's a machlokas whether we say the same thing by malchus. Anyway, but when it comes to misa, you need a majority of at least two. So in other words, as the Mishnah is going to go on to say, again, we've been saying that you have a Beis Din of 23. So the idea would be, in other words, if 12 of them vote to acquit him and 11 vote to convict, then that's it. He's acquitted because you have a majority of one. But in order to convict him, it's not enough to have 12 say he's guilty and 11 say he's innocent. You're going to need at least 12 to 10. If the Beis Din is an odd number, you're not going to have 12 to 10, but the later on in the Masechta, the Gemara is going to explain that you can have one, in some cases, you can have a Dayan abstain. You can have a Dayan say, I don't know what to decide in this case. The fact is, in other words, that if we have 12 who say chayev and 11 and 11 say zakai that he's innocent, then that's it. He's zakai. We don't really need. It's true, even though we don't have a majority latova. But actually, really, what it is the Rosh points out based on later on in the Masechta that actually it's not so simple. What we're going to do is the dayonim are going to discuss it among themselves. We're going to need at the end either a majority of one for good, namely 12 say that he's 12 say that he's innocent. And 11 say that he's guilty, and then that's it. Then the case is over. Or if we're still stuck on 12 saying guilty and 11 innocent, then we're going to need to have them discuss it among themselves or add dayonim and so forth in order to get that super majority that we need, as we'll learn later on in the Masechta. So in other words, the point is, so far, the Mishnah is saying So far, you're up to 22 dayonim. Because, in other words, since we said you have to have eidah shefetes, you have to have a full eidah of 10 that could potentially declare him guilty, and he's not going to actually be declared guilty unless you have a majority of two. It means you're going to have 22 so far. You're going to have 12 who declare him guilty and 10 that declare him innocent. So then you're going to have an eidah on each side. But then the ein beis din shokel. Now, a beis din cannot be an even number because what if they deadlock? So therefore, my sifin alei and oydachod. So therefore, you add one more dayan to the number. The Gemara is going to explain at the end of the perek. In that case, then you're never going to have your majority of two. So that's the Gemara is going to explain that we're talking about that you can have a dayan abstain and say that I don't know what to judge in this case, as we'll see towards the end of the perek on daf yud zayin. We'll see about that. The Mishnah finishes off. How many people have to be living in a city that the city should have a Sanhedrin Ktana of 23 in it? So Mayor of Estrim, it has to have a minimum of 120 people, as the Gemara is going to explain at the end of the Perek where we get that number from. Reb Nechemya says the minimum number of people in the city is going to be 230, corresponding to the Sarei Asaras. We find when Yisrael tells Moshe to appoint judges, he tells him that the minimum, the lowest level of judges are the Sarei Asaras, where each person is in charge of 10 people, including himself. So therefore, Reb Nechemya says, since we just established that a Sanhedrin Ktana consists of 23, then therefore you need 230 people, at least in the city, so that each one of the members of the Beis Din will be a Sar over 10. So if the city is smaller than that, less than 120 according to the Chachamim, less than 230 according to Reb Nechemya, then we don't put there a Beis Din of 23, then we just put a Beis Din of 3 over there. So the Gemara starts off. The first thing we said in the Mishnah, Dinei Mominus B'Shloisha, Gzeilus V'Chavolus B'Shloisha. So again, we said that Dinei Mominus require a Beis Din of 3, and Gzeilus, where a person steals or where a person steals from somebody else, with the examples that Rashi gave, or Chavolus, where he injures him, is B'Shloisha. So the Gemara asks, why list them separately? Otu Gzeilus V'Chavolus Lav Dinei Mominus Ninhu. Oh, Gzeilus and Chavolus, examples of Dinei Mominus. So why is the Mishnah listing them separately? The answer is Amar Rabbahu Mahein Katoni. So Rabbahu says the Mishnah doesn't mean they're separate things. The Mishnah is the Dinei Mominus B'Shloisha is basically like a heading for the Mishnah. When you say Dinei Mominus B'Shloisha, it means there's a general thing, Dinei Mominus, Mahein Dinei Mominus, not really a heading, but rather that we're defining. Mahein katoni. The Mishnah means, namely, what kind of dinim mominus? Namely, saying mahein dinim mominus gzelus v'chavolus. What kind of dinim mominus require a base din of 3 is gzelus v'chavolus, implying avol hadoros v'avoyis loy. Implying, in other words, the Mishnah would be saying when it's a case where one person is moida to the other that he owes him money. Halvois, where he actually lends him the money. So those kinds of things, loy, those you wouldn't need a base din of 3 for. Or at least you don't have the same, the Gemara is going to explain soon what Rav Abahu means, whether it means that you don't need 3 or whether it means that you need 3, but they can be of lesser caliber. The point is, in other words, halvois is partially the person is lending somebody money, and you have Adim watching it happen. And now you have they're coming to Beis Din afterwards, and the Edom are coming in Eden, and the person is Koifer and says, I never borrowed the money. Haidah would be Haidah, Rashi first explains, means that you have Ede Haidah. Now you can have, so there can be Edom who were there at the time of the Milva. We saw that Reuven lent Shimon X amount, or you can have Haidahs, which is we weren't there at the time of the loan, but later on, when Reuven says to Shimon, you know you owe me money, right? And Shimon says, in our presence, yes, you're right, I do owe you the money, that would be Haidahs. In either case, then the point is that we're saying that it requires a Beis Din, but not necessarily the same kind of Beis Din as Gzeilus for Chavolus. Then Rashi explains another way of understanding it is Hodois would mean Moedim Miktas, and Halvois would be with his Koifer Hakel. But Rashi prefers the first explanation. So in both cases, Hodois and Halvois, we're talking about the entire amount, but the question is on what basis are the Edim testifying and based in? On the basis that they saw the loan or on the basis that they were present when the Loiva admitted that he owes that amount. Anyway, the point is, again, Rabbi Boho was saying, when the Mishnah says dinim mominus v'shloisha, means not all dinim mominus are the same. Gzelus v'chabolus require three of a certain type, but hoidois and alvois do not. And in that case, then why does the Mishnah have to phrase it that way? So Rabbi Boho continues with Tzuricha. The Mishnah needed to mention that point. De'itona dinim mominus, if the Mishnah had only used the word dinim mominus, then you would say, have aminadat filo hoidois v'alvois, then you would think it includes all dinim mominus, including these cases of hoidois and alvois. Therefore tona gzelus v'chavolus. So therefore, the Mishnah needs to specify that by dinim mominus we mean specifically gzelus v'chavolus. The e tona gzelus v'chavolus. But if the Mishnah had only said that gzelus v'chavolus require a base din of three, v'loy katoni dinim mominus, if it hadn't started with the words dinim mominus, have amina who adin dafilo hoidois v'alvois, you would also say that maybe it includes hoidois v'alvois. V'hayde katoni gzelus v'chavolus, and you would think the reason why the Mishnah mentions gzelus v'chavolus is not because to exclude anything else, but mishum de'ikur shloisha de'ksivi v'gzelus v'chavolus ksivi, because you would say the whole concept that you need a base din of three in the first place is implied in the pasuk only when it comes to gzelus v'chavolus. Namely, gzelus, where do we see that you have a base din of three mentioned in connection with gzelus? Dichtiv, the pasuk says you have a case where a shomer is, where we have a shomer of a pekodin, and then he claims that it was stolen, and the pasuk says that, and the pasuk says they go to based, and the pasuk says v'nikra balabayis el ha'elikim. The pasuk says the balabayis should go to elikim, meaning to the dayonim. And three times in the pasuk over there, it mentions the word elikim. So that's where we learn that you need three. So that would be like zelus. And chavolos, when it comes to chavolos, we would derive from that you need three, because we would say mali chavol begufoy, mali chavol b'moine. After all, why would there be a difference between whether he injured his body or injured his possessions? Either way, once we've established that you need three for b'moine, then you would also need three for gufoy. So if the Mishnah had only said gzelus v'chavolus b'shloisha and not said dinim mominus, you would think the Mishnah means because from gzelus and chavolus is where we find the concept of three. But in fact, it would apply across the board. Note, the Mishnah therefore says dinim mominus b'shloisha, gzelus v'chavolus b'shloisha, to explain, in other words, that what kind of dinim mominus require three, specifically gzelus v'chavolus, as opposed to other kinds of dinim mominus which do not require three. Well, that's the Gemara asks. What does Rabbi Boho mean by that they don't require three? Olamai, as far as what? Ilema deloid ba'in and shloisha. Do you mean that Rabbi Boho is saying the Mishnah that is implying that you don't need a base din of three bechlal in order to judge such things? You can have fewer dayanim than that. No, va'am Rabbi Boho, the same Rabbi Boho says shnayim shedonu mominus dinim mominus, that if two dayanim judge dinim mominus, ledivrei hakol ein dinehem din. Everybody would agree that it's not a valid din. You always need at least three. That everyone agrees means later in the parak, in a few blah, we're going to talk about the concept of pshara, where Beis Din can try to make an arbitration between them and get them to agree to a compromise between them. We'll deal with that point later on Daf Vav, Beis Hashem. So you have different opinions that when it comes to pshara, you don't need three, but Rabbi Boho says when it comes to actual dinim mominus, you always need three. And if you have two, then Rabbi Boho says, ein dinayim din, then it's not a valid din Torah, and then it's not a valid din Torah. So how could Rabbi Boho be understanding our Mishnah to be meaning that you need all that for certain dinim mominus, not outside of gzelus v'chavolus, for hoidois and alvois, you need only two or few, you need only one or two, when Rabbi Boho himself clearly says that you need at least three? So the Gemara answer is ela d'lo b'inin mumchin. What Rabbi Boho means, though, is yes, you need three, but for hoidois v'halvois, you don't require them to be mumchin. They don't have to have the smicha ish mi piyish from Moshe Rabbeinu, and also, as we're going to learn in the parak, to have permission from the nasi to be able to judge such cases. When it comes to dinim mominus of hoidois v'halvois, you don't need such a thing, and any based in of three can any based in of three can judge such cases. So the Gemara asks, now why is that? He was saying that he so far we're set, so far we're understanding about Bahu to say as follows: within Dine Mominus themselves, you have Hoidois v'Halvois, which require three, but they don't have to be Mumchim, and then you have Xelus v'Chavolus, which require three, and they have to be Mumchim. The question is, where is Rabbi Bahu getting that distinction from? So the Gemara says, "My Kosovar." What is according to Rabbi Bahu? What does the Mishnah hold when it's drawing that distinction? Now you have like this: when the Torah says that the Torah mentions this case again of a shomer who claims that the object that he was watching has been stolen, and the pasuk says that they go to Beis Din. Now you have in the course of those psukim, it mentions the point that they come to Beis Din for anything that was lost. Asher yomar ki hu zeh, that he would say this is it. Now in Bava Kamma, the Gemara explains that there's a possibility that Iruv Parshius Kosov Khan, that those words Asher Yoimer Ki Hu Zeh are actually not talking about the case of a shomer, but rather they're talking about the case of a Moedim Mikzas. According to that opinion, in other words, that we would say when it comes to the shomer, he's chayev to swear whether he denies the entire claim or only part of it. He say, Reuven comes and says, I deposited $100 with you. Shimon says the $100 got stolen. So then we would say he has to go to Beis Din and swear. He's a koifer hackle. We would, and it says ki hu zeh, which implies he says this is it, meaning that this is it that I owe you. I don't owe you anything else of what you're claiming, meaning mori b'mitzas. So the opinion that says iruv parshias kosev kan says that pasuk is referring to a different case of mori b'mitzas. It doesn't belong to the case of a shomer. So a shomer is going to be chayav to swear regardless. Then you have the other opinion that says that there's not Iruv Parshius, and in fact that by Pekodin, that by Pekodin also he would have to be Moedim Mimitzas in order to have to swear. So what is the Tana of our Mishnah? And Rabbi Bahu was explaining the Mishnah. What does he hold in terms of that machlokes? Ikasover Iruv Parshius Kosov Khan, if he holds that there's a mixture of Parshius over here, and that the words that imply a Moedim Mitzas, Asher Yoimer Ki Hu Zeh, are talking about a Shomer, are talking rather not about a Shomer, but rather about a regular case outside of the Dinim of Shomerim, of Moedim Mitzas. So then it means, in other words, that when the Psukim are saying, Adha Alekim Yovid Var Shnehem, that you have to bring it to a Beis Din of Alekim, meaning three. And Elikim also means expert dayanim, ones who have smicha. Well, then liboy nami mumchin. Then hoidois v'halvois should require mumchim as well, because the word Elikim means mumchim, means dayanim who have smicha. V'ikasava ein eruv parshias kosov kan. If the Tana holds that it's not an eruv parshias, and in fact that all of it is talking about the shomer, and the shomer is chayev to swear, even if he's, whether he's kofa hakel or whether he's modim mitzas, well then, shloisha lomali, then why would we get, b'chlal, where would we get that hoidoris valvois would require three anyway? After all, the posik that mentions that you need three is only talking about xalus. So how is it that according to Rabbi Bahu, the Mishnah is telling us that yes, you need to have three always, but in the case of hoidoris valvois, they don't have to be mumchim, and in the case of xalus v'chavolus, they do. Where do we get that distinction from? Either we should say that they always require three and mumchim, or we should say that hodois v'halvois don't require three at all. So what's going on in the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, La'olam kasava eruv parshias kosov kan. In fact, the Mishnah might be hold, the Tana of the Mishnah might hold that eruv parshias kosov kan, meaning that yes, that posuk asher yoimer ki hu zeh is not referring to a shomer, but rather to a pekodin. By the way, I mean there's more complication within that. We look back in Bava Kamma, there's a Rashi versus Tosfos, different understandings of the Gemara. But whatever, the point is that the Tana of our Mishnah may hold that yes, in fact, that posuk is not referring to a shomer, but rather to a different case involving hodois valvois. In fact, then maybe we should, minatoda, we would actually require mumchim as well, for them to have smicha in order to even judge cases of hodois valvois. But in a mumchim, the fact that we don't require that is a takonis chachamim mishum de Rab Chanina, based on what Rab Chanina says. We find another example where we're more lenient with dinim mominus, with certain kinds of dinim mominus, based on a takonis chachamim. Rab Chanina, we find Rab Chanina says a similar idea about a kula that we make a takana de rabbanon to be makel in certain details of dinim mamonis. Rab Chanina says dvar Torah echad dinim mamonis veechad dinim nefoshes bedrusha v'chakira mina Torah, whether edim are coming to testify on dinim mamonis or dinim nefoshes, either way you would have to cross examine them thoroughly, and we're going to learn later on in the Masechta about the different questions that they would ask. Shenema, because the pasuk says mishpat echad yelachem, because the pasuk says you should have one law for you, which means that dinim mamonis are going to be like dinim nefoshes in that regard. So minat Torah, when edim come to Beis Din to testify, for example, that Reuven lent Shimon money, then they're going to have to ask them a whole barrage of questions to make sure that they know the exact date and time and everything. But Rabbi Chanina says, why by dinim mamonis? The Chacham say you don't require drusha v'hakira because you have the famous takana of the Chachamim. You don't want to lock the door against borrowers. People are not going to be willing to borrow money to lend money if they know that the edim who are going to witness it are going to be so thoroughly cross-examined by Beis Din. And if they trip up in the cross-examination, then their whole edus is going to be discarded, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta. So therefore, so a person might not be willing to lend money and take his chances with that. So therefore, Rabbi Chanina says, the Chachamim made a kula there and said that when it comes to dinim mamonis, we don't require such intensive drusha v'chakira. We have to ask them, of course, to make sure that what they say matches up. But we don't say, for example, if one of them, if there's a little bit of a discrepancy in their address, we're not going to necessarily throw it out. So the point is, in a similar vein, then we can say that minat Torah you do require smuchim to judge even cases of hodos v'havos. But Rabbi Bohu is saying the Mishnah is telling us that midrabanan you don't need to for the same reason shalatino delos b'fnei loivin. So Gemara says, so we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll see. This is one explanation of the Mishnah, and then we'll say that there's another explanation as well of what the Mishnah means by mentioning Dinim Mamonis and Gzelus V'Chavolos separately. And we'll also talk about Be'ez Hashem, what kinds of cases nowadays that nobody has that smicha, Ish Mipiish, what kind of cases does Beis Din have jurisdiction over and are able to judge, and what case is not. We'll talk about that more tomorrow, Best of Shen.